Purple Lights, your podcast home for SFA sports talk. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SFA Sawmill or check us out at www.sfasawmill.com. Be sure to subscribe here so you don't miss an episode of Purple Lights. And now for the latest happenings on Lumberjacks and Lady Jacks, here's Isaac and Richard. Axum Jacks.
Hello, Lumberjack fans. Welcome to another season and another episode of Purple Lights, your SFA sports podcast. This is Richard Boyer.
Isaac Nietrauer. It's been a while.
And we are back. Gearing up for football season. We are putting the podcast back together. And it was something that was pretty popular last season when we were doing it. And we will kick off this interesting season for the Lumberjacks coming up here. As we record, we are in scrimmages and the fall practice, gearing up for the season opener against Mississippi State. And I tell you what, just as many there's way more questions than answers with this team right now. And so we'll try to see what we can expect. We'll look at the season ahead, look at the schedule. But you know, the elephant in the room is the coaching situation.
You're right about the more questions than answers, and I think we probably have more questions. The coaching staff probably has as many questions as we do, because I think a lot of this is going to kind of be in flux for a few weeks, and we're going to see, you know, I think by probably a month into the season, we'll have an idea of who we are. But, and we were talking about this off the air, we really don't have what I think we would consider what should be a competitive game until they play Abilene Christian at home. And maybe not even there, because Abilene Christian, although they may be better this year, hasn't been good, you know, for a few years now. And it's going to be interesting, and we really won't know a lot about this team, I think, until a few weeks in.
About a year ago, we were sitting in Nacogdoches, sitting in Frogs, and interviewing the new defensive coordinator, Jeff Bird, and had a great time meeting with him and everything, but you know, none of us knew where he'd be sitting right now.
No, he definitely wasn't brought in for this role, and nobody is. I don't know. You know, it's a tough situation, and if you're on the optimistic side of those things, you look at interim coaches around the country, and you know, for an unexplained reason, they seem to do well. They seem to win. You know, think back to just the first one that comes to my mind in the NFL would be Jason Garrett when he got the job at Wade Phillips. I think they were that 2010 season, they were mirrored and, you know, had maybe two wins, something like that. I'd have to check.
They end up
going 5-3 or something. I don't know what it is about the interim coaches, but it always seems to kind of put a spark in a team.
They can instill that it's us against the world, and you know, sometimes they'll play for that guy. And you know, as I said, we had a great interview and a great time meeting with Jeff Bird. And you know, he's kind of, you know, held his head up high through this, and it, for him, it's a great opportunity. I mean, to step into this interim head coach role on a team that hopefully is on a, you know, on their way to rebuilding and being competitive in the conference again. And it was a defense that showed a little bit of improvement under him, you know, compared to the season before. And we'll take a look and see what he brings to this, but. Like I said, he's doing the right things, saying the right things, and hopefully we'll see what happens on the field if there's buy-in from the players.
Well, that's the thing that always bothers me about this is, you know, people always say, well, this guy, they're playing for the interim coach, and that's why they're doing better, and there's a little extra try. But to me, that always begs the question, well, were they not trying before? Yeah. That's the question. And you know, you look at that in college or the NFL, it's really the same principle. Where was that effort before? Were they not trying before? You know, where is that extra, you know, little room coming from? Or is it just maybe the change of scenery, the change of pace, the new routine, those types of things?
I think in many of the positions over the past couple of years, they haven't played to their paper. We thought there was more talent than results we saw on the field, maybe with the exception of the offensive line. But mm-hmm.
We thought that's a big exception, though.
It's an important one. But we talk about the skill positions. They thought they were pretty good. They talk about the you know, defensive line. They thought they had some, you know, some good players there. A couple years ago, the secondary was pretty weak. Last year, you could argue it was one of the best. It was one of the strengths of the team.
Sure, and they had help, right? Because obviously with Jeff Bird's scheme, they're dropping a lot more. But
right. Yeah, but no, Alize Ward, and being in the right place at the right time and making some incredible plays. And but I think that, you know, there was some sparks last year where you thought, okay, you know, this defense might be getting it together. But, you know, I think that there's a big question with how are they going to work? What's the play calling going to be like? So from our understanding, Jeff Bird's going to hang on to the defense and still call the plays defensively.
And I think we both agree that's a good thing.
Right? Sure, absolutely. And so, you know, tell us what to expect on the offensive side.
Well, I wish I knew. Right? Obviously, it's co-offensive coordinators now, and this is coming in absence of Clint Conk, who is going to kind of take on that role. We talked about that in the offseason. Kevin Barbey, who's brought in to be the quarterback's coach, is kind of the leader of that group along with Jeremy Moses. But because we don't know a lot about that, let me ask you this. Let's say for a minute that you decide what the offense looks like this year. What is the perfect offense with this personnel? Let's remember, they put in that scheme in the spring, so they're not going too far away from it. Right. What should it look like this fall?
Well, and you say with that personnel, who's taking the snaps? Who is that personnel?
That's a good point.
The reason I say that is because a Foster Sawyer led offense is probably going to call different plays and throw the ball more than if you go to Blumrick or Josh Covey. And if those of you aren't familiar with the name Josh Covey, he was the third string quarterback last year at University of Texas.
And he's a mobile guy.
He is more of a running
wide
quarterback.
Receiver.
That's right.
And he's an athlete beyond just an arm.
Right. He's not a drop back quarterback, and he is way more mobile than what we would expect out of a surgically repaired Foster Sawyer or
even
Jake Blumrick.
Pre-surgically repaired Foster Sawyer, as we saw last year.
Right, right.
Ironically, the play he got injured on was a scramble to the sideline. So he had a little bit of movement in him, but yeah.
Yeah, well, and there were times, and when he did get some time, we've talked about this, should he have even come back last year?
Well, in hindsight, I think the answer is clearly no. Right. I think at the time, they had just won that game in Abilene, and he took some time, and I think when he did come back, there was still the hope that, he comes back, really heading into a season where they felt like, they had a chance to compete, and then, obviously gets hurt in that win against Abilene. Even at that point, you're still feeling like, okay, maybe it was worth it to have him here, depending on whether or not they can salvage the season. And then obviously it went south.
The arm was good. The arm was good. The legs weren't.
Right.
If all you could do is sit back there and, quite frankly, it could have gone a lot better for Foster Sawyer had the offensive line performed better.
Well, I was sitting up there in the press box at SMU beginning of the season and watched that him absolutely get killed on that a couple straight plays there. And the comments up there in the box at the time was, if this is not an anomaly. Now, SMU, obviously there's a talent gap there.
Right.
But SMU was not particularly strong on their defensive line, or at least they weren't supposed to be. And so they had a couple players for sure, but the idea being that if this was not an anomaly, this guy's not going to make it through the season. And that prediction, unfortunately, was a reality.
Well, and then what we're looking at right now, we're looking a couple weeks away. Are they going to do the same thing? Unless that coaching staff feels like there's a significant improvement at offensive line, are you doing the same thing to Foster Sawyer again at Mississippi State?
And that brings us back to the question of what should it look like? And
that's,
let's suppose for a minute Foster Sawyer is a better quarterback. Maybe for this team, Josh Covey is a better quarterback because of that offensive line situation. You get him out of the pocket in motion a little bit, and maybe you create some opportunities there that Foster wouldn't be able to take advantage of.
And a lot of that depends on, we think and we have reason to believe that this is a pretty good receiving core. Now
they've supposedly been good for a few years now, though, right?
But you got
and we
if
haven't
you
really
can't get them the ball,
yeah.
If you can't get them the ball, maybe a run first a run to set up the pass type of offense with a Josh Covey or with whatever quarterback you choose is a better way to do that, because we think the running backs are not bad.
And either. That's been kind of the goal, right, of the offense the last few years. If you were to talk to Clint Conk, because the complaint under the Clint Conk offense is, this goes back to Central Arkansas years,
yep,
was that there's the little hitch routes and bubble screens and these, you know, little 2-yard, 3-yard completions that really don't get you very far. You ask him about that, his comment is, well, that is our running game. These are extensions of the running game. The idea is just to get the ball in someone's hands and give him a chance to make plays. And if you go back more time to Louisiana Tech days when Clint Conk was a prolific offensive coordinator, mm-hmm, that was great, and it was imaginative, and it was successful. And then the early days in Central Arkansas, they had a great offense, and you know they were winning a little more with defense at the end of that. But it's almost like they kind of caught up to it. And if there was a legitimate complaint about what Clint Conk's offense did not do well, that may have been it, that it didn't evolve over time, that people seem to catch up to it. That's kind of what you hope. Maybe this change of scenery, even though they're not installing a new offense, that maybe this change of scenery at least creates some new wrinkles to it.
And it was obvious what would happen once folks started, you know, the last time SFA had a prolific offense, the Shannon Dawson days and through that.
Yeah.
A good team that would start, you didn't know if they were going to drop back three of their linemen and rush their linebackers or keep their linebackers up and trying to, you know, that's where they would run into problems, is when the defensive line would drop back into that little 5-yard little hitch zone, mm-hmm, or those little crossing patterns. And, you know, back in those days, that's when things started getting a little more difficult for that. So you're right. Defenses all over college football get a chance to catch up if they have the personnel to do so.
And to Clint's credit, and this is where, you know, I think I always sort of believed that he would turn that corner, especially this year, kind of taking the reins of the offense himself. When he had a healthy quarterback and a good quarterback situation, it actually looked pretty good at times. When his first year with Zach there, he came in from UTSA. He was a pretty good quarterback that year. He got hurt against TCU, and then it seemed like his confidence kind of came and went a little bit. Last year, they looked all right under Foster Sawyer, save maybe that first game. Right. They looked pretty bad. They had their moments. It looked like there was a chance, even with the terrible offensive line situation. And then he gets hurt. And, you know, Jake Blumrick was not ready to step in there. And, you know, optimistically, you hope Jake Blumrick has grown up. But that offense was awful. Awful with Blumrick behind under center. And there's not a nice way to say that. They had opportunities to win games if they could have just moved the ball a little bit.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And they couldn't do even that.
As bad as that offense looked at times, you know, name the blowouts. You know,
right,
there weren't that many.
But
they
that's
were
the
in
thing is,
games.
He could have won those.
Yeah.
Sam Houston State, there was probably 4 or 5 straight drives where they could have come down and yep, had the go-ahead score before, obviously, they put it away late. Because the defense kept them in every game there was to play, but they couldn't score when it mattered. And the only opportunity really the defense let them down at any point was against Central Arkansas when they gave up the late touchdown.
Yeah.
But even then, it shouldn't have even been in that situation.
Well,
the offense
could have
just moved
yep,
the ball.
Yep. Short 3 and outs or how many times did we see the offense when it would get moving, they would, you know, get into the red zone and there'd be a turnover.
Right.
It would be a and it usually wasn't. It wasn't a fumble. It was an interception. You know.
Yeah. But 3 straight passes and a punt is almost a turnover too. And if it's, you know, yeah, 4 straight possessions that way, and that was constant. And then what would happen is the defense would be on the field so much they'd just get worn down, and that's what we saw against Nichols.
That's exactly what happened.
With their physical offensive line, they just eventually beat them up. And as good as the defense was last year, they're susceptible just like every other to fatigue, and they got fatigued.
Yeah, well, I mean, that Nichols game, that was a great first half for
yeah,
SFA, and then they just I think they gave up a late score at the end of the first half, and then it just snowballed, and it was a disaster the second half. But mm-hmm, but here's the thing, Nichols is going to be good again.
Well, you
Sam's going to be good again.
Yeah, but you mentioned the skill positions, right? Yep. We thought SFA had talent on the skill positions, and I really believe this about college football in general, that the gap between teams at the different levels at the skill positions isn't that sharp. A lot of SFA's receivers, their running backs, they could have gone and played for those teams. Reality of the matter is that you go even to the Division II level, or you know, the bad FCS teams, and a lot of those guys came straight from Division I as transfers. Yeah. Where the real difference between these teams is on the lines. And that's where you see the talent gap. That's why when SFA goes and plays at Mississippi State, they will not win.
Yeah.
They will not have a chance to win. Not because their skill positions couldn't beat their cornerbacks on a one-on-one.
Look at the strength.
But because there's no chance in the trenches. And where Nichols was able to beat SFA was that right there. Because Nichols had an offensive line. Well, we watched them hang with Texas A&M.
Yeah.
They had that kind of offensive line. Their skill position players were not better. In fact, I will say they were probably notably worse. They were not the fourth or fifth most talented team in the league from a skill position standpoint. But their offensive line was built.
It seems like they're getting the folks that couldn't cut it at LSU when McNeese used to get those.
Yeah,
but
or Southeastern.
When you see, you know, had someone tell me, well, you know, I see a guy on a Southland Conference team, offensive line. You know, he's 315, you know, 315 pounds, and the guy on the other, you know, the defensive lineman's, you know, big too. The difference between those two is even the ones that might have the height and weight, that guy in the SEC, that guy in the Big 12, you know, runs a second faster.
Yeah,
and that's it's not just the size, it's the speed and the conditioning, mm-hmm. and things like that. And you're right, that's if you wanted the tell the tale. That's where it is. It's in the size, strength, and speed of the two lines.
Yeah.
And
by the way,
ideally, we should see the same thing when we play Tarleton.
Well, yeah.
We should have that advantage over a D2 team.
Should.
And if you don't, then you've got bigger problems. I remember the several years ago when we had the winless season, mm-hmm. and I think our loss was to D2 Henderson State.
Yikes.
And we might have beat Henderson the year before. It might have been to a Tarleton. I think it might have been to Tarleton that year. And that's when everyone was like, "Oh man, you know, we are in trouble."
Really bad. Yeah.
When Tarleton's winning, going away, mm-hmm. You know, go to the schedule and find one you're going to win. You know, and we didn't that year, but 2 years from that, we're in the playoffs. You know, with two con- so. You know, I think Jeff Bird has a chance to do something, and you know, despite what you might think, I think if he has a winning season, even with the new AD, he might get an extra year.
He keeps the job. All right,
he might.
Well, let's do this, and let's go through the schedule. You tell me what games they win. And then let's decide. We'll lay the gauntlet down today whether Jeff Bird keeps his job.
All right.
So let's start week one, Mississippi State.
That's a loss. But you know that.
What do you want to see in that game? What if you're an SFA fan, or you're an SFA coach? What you see in that game that you just want? Man, that's encouraging. That's a good sign.
You know, I want to see the offense. I like to see an offensive touchdown in the second half.
Okay.
What you see those, you know, they're hyped up. A lot of times there'll be a first half score. You know, it may be 28-7 at halftime, mm-hmm. or something like that. First of all, I'd like to see them within 14 at the half, and I want to see a second half score, because what you see in these games with SFA over and over is nothing in the second half.
You know what I want to see?
What's that?
Not a single starter play.
Yeah.
They all come out healthy.
You want to treat it like a preseason game.
Well, Mississippi State's probably going to treat it like a preseason game by the third series, but it, you know that, and that's assuming, of course, they're up by two possessions by then. But I won't be shocked.
No, at home, Tarleton State. Now, you know, I think Tarleton State's going to be tougher than you think. Not, and I don't mean that as a shot at the Jacks.
Yeah.
But remember who's coaching Tarleton State,
right?
You know, former SFA quarterback who was passed over for a head coaching job, then went to Sam Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I think that team will be, you know, this is their early season Super Bowl for Tarleton State to play up.
Yeah, well, and he may not play, but there may be a familiar face too under center, and that's Dallas Seeley, who SFA has seen quite a few years, the last few at Abilene Christian. Really good passer, just had some off the field trouble that got him out, and then obviously Abilene Christian with their prolific young passer,
right?
That's kind of come up under the scenes, and that'll be the next week, or the couple weeks later, but. Obviously, if this team's going to have a chance to do anything in the league, I think you have to pretty decisively beat Tarleton.
I would like to see a victory by more than 14. That to be
the 14
be successful.
Even might be a little concerning,
you've got to play well there.
So then, Incarnate Word at Incarnate Word in San Antonio.
Well, I mean, remember how we won that game last
year?
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
and it was a sign of things to come, right? Because yes, it was felt good. It was nice to win a game.
Get you on sports.
If you were going to be good, you had to win by a little more than an Alize Ward walk off.
Right, probably doing what coaches would tell him not to do. Right.
Right.
Get out of bounds and let's
kick
take a shot at kick a field goal.
Yeah.
Not risk it all, but he did, and it, you know, it's like no, great play, you know. You've got to show up better. If I agree with you, if this team is going to be better, this needs to be a fairly decisive victory. That I don't think Incarnate Word got decisively better this offseason.
I mean, they got a different coach, but
right. Well, yeah, you know this will be their third game under the new system, new coach, things like that. This needs to be, even though it's in San Antonio, this needs to be a SFA win.
They shouldn't have the talent to contend.
I will say this. If they start out 0-3, then I'm with you that Bird doesn't keep his job.
Well, okay, but here's the thing, right? So even if SFA is going to have a mediocre season, there really should not be a competitive game at least until week 4 when they play Abilene Christian, because you've got Mississippi State, not going to be competitive. You've got Tarleton State, shouldn't be competitive. Incarnate Word shouldn't be competitive. You could probably even make the same argument for Abilene Christian. It shouldn't be competitive. You could win those three straight games and still have a completely mediocre 5th or 4th place season, because those are really kind of three of your easiest games right off the bat.
Abilene Christian's defense is not that bad.
No, and they should be better this year.
Yeah, so
but there's been some turmoil there too, and their athletic director out after some conflicts there, some internal drama. They've had their share of distractions this year, but Adam Durrell, I think very highly of him as a coach, and he obviously slaughtered the country as a Division II coach. So there's reason to think they're going to be better.
Well, and I also think that's another one that I think it's important that is in Nacogdoches.
Yeah,
we went out there and we're lucky to come away with a win last year.
Foster got hurt.
Yep, that was a close game. Yeah. But that was the game where the SFA defense probably played their best game. Now, I think we found out that the Abilene Christian offense wasn't what we thought it was
going to
be.
Right, at the time we thought they were going to be okay.
That's right, that's right.
And didn't turn out that way. But the flip side of that too is obviously Abilene Christian has a stud of a young quarterback whose family actually has their name on their stadium over there in Anthony Field. So he comes from some background. He and Foster Sawyer actually went to the same high school together. I think they overlapped their high school careers by a season or something like that. And that's Luke Anthony.
So that's going to be...
And he could be good. I mean, if he shows what he showed, I think he threw 4 touchdowns against Sam late in the year last season at a loss. He's got a chance to be one of the really good quarterbacks in the league this year.
I think that'll be a real telltale game for how the conference season's going to go.
You still think that should be a win, though,
yes,
right?
Yes, it should be a win.
That should be a win. And so where it really gets competitive then are the 3 straight against McNeese, Sam Houston, and Central Arkansas. That's a three straight games that today you look at SFA as probably the dog in all 3.
And it's been like that for the last few years where the gauntlet's been right there in the middle of the season. Now, I'd probably rather have it in the middle of the season than right off the bat in the conference.
And you're at Lake Charles, too, on the road. And then NRG Stadium, and then at home against UCA.
I tell you what, I don't.
Who's without a coach, by the way? UCA's in transition too, so you don't necessarily know what you're going to get from them. They lost a lot of talent. All three of those teams really lost a lot of talent from last year, so they're consistently competitive programs, but you don't necessarily know what you're going to get.
This is the year we beat Sam.
Is that your official prediction?
Yes, we're going to beat Sam prediction. This year.
All right.
This is going to
beat Sam.
Because we've been close these last few years with a clearly inferior team.
Yeah.
And it's been you got to admit, the last few years, they were closer than they probably should have been.
Sure.
In the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I think they find a way to get that done. Now, does that mean they lose, you know, McNeese the week before, or you know, Central? If they beat Sam, you know, even if it's a, you know, fluke fumble, you know, some weird way that they win that. I think that can propel
them. Buying Jeff Bird if that happens.
But well, that's the thing.
Here's
the thing,
right?
You're right.
I've been around SFA now for 5 years. I've been covering the team for 4, and I've never seen SFA beat Sam. So until I see it with my own eyes,
I was on the sideline the first year at Reliant Stadium before it was even NRG Stadium. The first year of this back then, and you know where we won, and it was unbelievable. I mean the energy in that building, and the thing is the attendance on that game has continued to grow, even with SFA losing 4 or 5 in a row.
It seems to be the game where the Sam fans come out, though.
Yeah.
Because if you go to their home, and I've been to a home game in Huntsville, as good as their program has been, and back when I went there, they had just come back from a national championship, 2 national championships, in fact.
Well, they lost.
And, yeah, but nevertheless, they were the team, right, in this region, not just the Southland. They were the FCS team that wasn't, you know, the Bison, right? And they can't fill that stadium. SFA consistently has better attendance numbers. But at the Battle of Piney Woods, you don't see that. That's where – and there's some geographic angle to that too, right? Huntsville has a much bigger Houston alumni base, whereas SFA is more Dallas and Houston.
That's correct.
Of course, we're recording from Dallas
right now.
That's true, yeah. But nevertheless, it's you know, that growth has maybe not been from the purpose.
Well, and I think the success, you know, SFA wins one, the SFA attendance goes up for that next year.
Well, you hope.
You know, yeah. And I think this is going to about finally be the year that they get that done. Like I said, they may lose games that they're supposed to win, but I think Jeff Bird is going to be able to fire them up for at least this one, and this is where you'll tell whether they're going to really play for this guy or not.
Okay, so you have Mississippi State loss, Tarleton State win, Incarnate Word win, ACU, that was a win, right?
Yes.
ACU win, McNeese in Lake Charles.
You know what? I'll actually probably give that one. Weird things happen in Lake Charles.
So loss.
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 Yeah, yeah.
Sam Houston win.
Win.
Central Arkansas at SFA.
Home game, we win it.
Win. Wow. All right. SFA HBU at Houston.
You know what? We overcome. It's a, you know, the it's where they clear the slate. The conk days are gone.
Yeah.
It's not as much of a rivalry game for UCA because they don't have Clint Conk on the other sidelines.
Uh-huh.
So they're not as geared up for it. It's at SFA. SFA is going to have a what were we at? 3-3, 4-3
at this point?
No. I have them at like 4-2 by that point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I have them at 4-2. And we don't know what Central Arkansas. I mean, I've seen polls where they're slipped into the top 20, but I don't buy that for a second.
Yeah,
I don't think they're that strong.
Okay, so 4-2. What you got? So at that point, there. Let's see what we have here. 1, 2, 3, 4. That'd be 5-2. Houston After. Baptist in Houston, that's a win.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
5,
yeah.
So 6-2. Lamar at SFA. Lamar's been pretty bad, but new coach.
Lamar, no.
7-2.
You know what?
So 7-2 heading into Nichols at Nichols.
Again, weird things happen in Lake Charles and Thibodeau.
7-3.
Yeah, well, if they're what they're supposed to be,
yeah.
And I don't have any reason to think that they're not because I was at that game – last year, I mean, you were too, but sure. Nichols looked really good, man.
They're the strongest team in the league.
And I still can't figure out, if you're a decent athlete in this region of the country, why the heck would you go there? Facilities,
Revo's
tradition.
Doing something special there.
Yeah.
And you know what? They've had good years before. It's not totally outlandish to think that they could be.
But I'm just thinking, comparing to the other schools in the conference, they have a lot of it's financial stuff. They have the worst facilities.
They don't have much tradition. Nichols developed their talent. They didn't necessarily bring in these great players. I mean, they built these guys up. These offensive linemen,
right?
They weren't highly regarded, but they're strong as heck now because they developed them. And maybe that's what
I don't know.
That's what the other teams are missing, right? Right. They're looking for these guys they can plug in from JUCO. Build your guys from front. Build them, and then Northwestern State at SFA.
We're taking the Chief back.
So you've got
never should have lost it.
8-4, right?
Yeah, never should have lost.
8-4, playoff team?
No,
8-4 missed the playoffs.
No, 8-4 misses the playoffs. The only reason 8-4 got to the playoffs was because of Clint Conk's relationships with the folks that made the decisions on who got the at-large bids. Year they went to the playoffs, they had no business being there, and that was proven next week. They were a decent to good team, mm-hmm. but they weren't a playoff caliber team that year.
So 8-4, but missed the playoff. That'd be your prediction.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
So I'm going to go through this now because I see it's a little different.
I mean, who out there listening wouldn't take 8-4 right now after what you saw last year?
No question. Yeah. No question. SFA Mississippi State loss, Tarleton win, Incarnate Word win, ACU I'm going to say loss because. Man, I don't know what it is about ACU, but last year was a fluke. We haven't been able to beat them.
In their big, fancy, you know, overpriced stadium, you know, we beat them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, McNeese lost, Sam Houston lost, Central Arkansas, I'm going to say win, SFHBU win, Lamar win, Nichols lost, Northwestern win, but I'm not sold on that one either. So I'm seeing a middling 500 team, a little better maybe in the last couple of years, but not much. And that doesn't mean they're going to be incompetent. I think they'll be competitive, and they may steal one of these games against one of the good teams. But I'm going to have to see something.
What did you have against Northwestern?
A win, but I'm not sold on that.
Okay. And that's in Natchitoches?
That's in Nacogdoches.
Oh, it's in Nacogdoches.
Yeah,
okay.
This one's at home. And that seems to be that way, right, where the home team always wins.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the tiebreaker for me. I think Northwestern State's going to be better this year, but...
Well, they were... Yeah, but they were...
Oh, they've been
They
bad.
Were pretty bad.
Well, bad, but blew us out.
Yeah, and I don't know what was... That. You know, there were folks that thought there needed to be, you know, especially after the way the Lamar and the... the way the season ended last year, mm-hmm. you know, where I don't think the team quit, but they sure didn't look very good.
Right.
And there were folks that thought just based on merit, there should have been a coaching change, just on results.
But this is one of the reasons, well, there's a couple factors at play here that kept Clint Conk, the coach, through where this stuff happened in June. Number one was the contract. He had one more year on that contract that was guaranteed. And you're paying him regardless. You can either pay him to coach the team or pay him to sit at home. The other factor, though, which extended beyond that, is I think for years he's pointed to this season. This was the year of maturation. So many young guys that he built, you know, from their freshman year that have been playing since they were freshmen or redshirt freshmen. This is kind of their coming of age, their junior year for some, for their senior year for others. This was supposed to be the year where it kind of was put together. And it also times, you know, with if you look around the landscape of the conference, it's kind of where their talent is kind of abandoned. There's no more Jeremiah Briscoe or P.J. Hall or Central Arkansas's quarterback, whose name is slipping me today. But these guys who have just been tearing up the league for years, this is kind of the first year without them.
Without them, right.
And so you look at the landscape of the league, you look at SFA's roster, and this is supposed to be kind of the peak year. So I think, was there a question about Clint's job after fall? Of course, because he hadn't. I mean, you look at someone like Tim Rebo.
Yeah.
Yes, it takes time to build a team, but Rebo did it real quick. So, you know, there's an expectation there. But you had to kind of you couldn't fire him after that year with this 1 year, just this next season, right? And then you kind of reevaluate when the contract's up, and that made the most sense. There is reason to believe in Clint, and it's not I mean, it's quite well documented that I did, that I was drinking the Kool-Aid, and I'm disappointed that we won't get to see the fruit of that, because I think I actually had money on this season for that. And I saw them as a playoff team up until this, and it's possible they still will be. I think that there's a chance, though, that this team makes the play. I think anything short of the playoffs, I see no way Jeff Bird comes back. And I don't see them as a playoff team, and I don't see him coming back. Because you got to look at Ryan Ivey's history. He brings his people
where he goes. And that's what he has working against him.
Yeah.
But 8-4, you think you lose your job after 8-4? If that happens...
You lose your... Okay, but here's the thing. We talked about interim coaches and the spark that they bring. But what happens after that first year? A lot of the time, I mean, and it'd be interesting to kind of do this from a scientific perspective and look, that spark is not permanent. It wears off. Right. And if that is kind of what happens here, that he's able to kind of spark this team on a run, you know, do you really want to lock that down for? I mean, you're not going to sign him to a 1 year deal, so you're locked in after this year. You got to, you know, renegotiate this contract if you give him the head coaching job, and it could be two years.
Yeah, you do. It's 2 years, right? I mean,
it could be 2 years.
Traditionally,
but you're still
what SFA will do is they'll do a 2 year rolling.
And I don't know that you're ready to make a 3 year commitment to this guy. Whereas this, just counting this year, without real, I mean, he's not been a head coach. Okay, we'll put it this way: if not for the fact that Clint Conk got fired in the summer. Suspended at that point. What would Clint Conk even? I mean, would Jeff Bird even be on a candidate list? He's not. He's not from a. I'm not saying he's not a great coach. He could be a fantastic coach, and I hope I'm wrong on this. But his resume does not cry Division One head coaching material.
You wouldn't consider him if he wasn't
already on your team. Probably.
You know. Not after 1 year of defensive coordinator at SFA and
UT Martin.
And UT Martin.
Right? He's been successful as a defensive coordinator, but he hasn't been a head coach.
And if it was, it would be kind of a lower tier team that was rebuilding or something like that.
So you look at it objectively.
Okay, so here's the question. Well, then why was he the one promoted then?
What was the alternative?
Well, I think
this had happened last year, I think the obvious choice would have been Gary Croton.
Yeah.
Not that, I mean, he's gone for a reason too, but there is a guy that not only had head coaching experience, but had high level head coaching experience, has worked in the NFL, has worked for a dozen college football teams, and pretty much invented the offense that became famous at Oregon. So there's a guy who's qualified, at least, to be the head coach. Jeff Bird could be – you could give them both the same team, and Jeff Bird may be that much better. And I think there's a chance he's going to be fantastic. But I think he's going to have a he's got an uphill battle here because he doesn't have what you would ordinarily consider the background for a head coach at this level. For a team that thinks they should be in the national championship picture.
So if you're Ryan Ivey, obviously you want success for your team.
Sure.
And so you think during the season he's got his eyes out for who he might want to bring in already?
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
I think he's got his eyes out for who he wants to bring in now.
Right.
He probably knows who his short list is, or at least who he'd like to see on his list.
But it wouldn't go so far as, hey, I hope I don't have to make that tough decision. I hope this is pretty easy, so I hope they don't do too well. I mean,
he wouldn't do that. He's not going to undercut Bird during the season. He's got full faith in him right now.
Right. And I think that's what it's got to be. I think you've just got to say, you know, this is how we're going to do this season. And I think, you know, Coach Bird is smart enough to know the situation, know it.
You don't think he has his eye on jobs around the country?
I mean, right.
If you're on the SFA staff right now and you're smart, you've got to be looking out because your job is not guaranteed. You could be Jeremy Moses and your job is not guaranteed.
Unfortunately, that's probably true. When you're talking about new leadership, you want to, you know, it could be, you know, a complete clean out in the football program. And it may have been this way even with Clint Conk there.
Yeah, it's possible.
I think everyone was still going to play for their jobs.
Right.
You know, you would think among the head coaches at SFA, Kyle Keller's pretty safe. for this year.
It takes some a couple really bad seasons.
I'm talking about just this one season.
Oh,
he could have a bad season.
No, he could. He could lose every game and he's not going anywhere.
He's
that might be an exaggeration. Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
Right. You know, Coach Humphreys. You know.
Yeah. I think she'll retire.
Yes,
there.
I think she's completely safe. But I mean, I think you know,
Crittenden is not going anywhere.
No. He's. I mean. He might, but not because of Ryan.
Not exactly. Well, Keller in that case.
Yeah. But I think there's a lot of folks in there that, you know, it's been a kind of an internal thing for mm-hmm. a long time. You know, back to, you know, my good friend Mr. McCarty, back when he was the AD, you know, handed it down to Robert Hill. Now this is uncertainty because they actually went with someone from the outside for this. And it's different because it's not what SFA has traditionally done. And we talk about tradition. If you go back to Steve McCarty, I mean, shoot, that's, you know, 20-some years.
Yeah.
You know, so, and you're talking about somebody who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, you know, for being an AD.
No, this is not, it's not unique to SFA, to clarify, but we know, and you definitely know this in your time with the Board of Regents, SFA is a good old boys school. They like their people, and that's not always a bad thing because it's given us people like Robert Hill.
They like to keep it in-house. They like to keep it in-house, and it's not just in the athletic department either. I mean, that's they will look to promote from within first, usually. Now, it may be a different story. It may be a different day down there. I'm not as close to it as I used to be. And was I a little surprised that they went outside with Ryan Ivey? You know, I'm not going to say...
I think everyone was.
I think they're surprised, but I'm not going to say it wasn't a, wow, look at this. You know, look maybe things are changing. I know exactly what you mean. Now, I agree with you when you went from McCarty. And I wasn't on the board during any of the athletic director changes, but several coaching changes I was. And so Robert had already, Steve McCarty had already resigned right before I got on, and Robert Hill was, I think, in his second year when I came on. And so...
You're showing your age.
I know, I am old. But the, but I don't think people can argue with those choices. I think Robert Hill did a fine job with what he had, and... I mean,
you look historically at the Lumberjacks athletic department, they've had some good seasons, but there hasn't been a season of winning like Robert Hill had, football excluded. Well, he for a time there, too. They were winning, right. But the overall winning at SFA is not, I mean, that's unique. And people that have just kind of come into the program over the last few years need to understand that's not historically been the normal. You go look at even basketball up until, you know, the early 90s and, or I'm sorry, the early 2000s, and they were pretty bad.
Back in those days, and even showing my age, back when I was a student at SFA, you know, we had a top 20, top 10-ish women's basketball program, and
really through the 90s.
Yeah, and to the point where Nacogdoches and Johnson Coliseum hosted NCAA tournament games.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was that good, and they were nationally ranked, and it was a destination place, now these coaches will tell you sometimes it's hard to get a team to go travel to Nacogdoches.
Hey, how about Alabama, though?
Yeah, they do got Alabama this year, but... I tell you what, that was not a problem because they were that good back then.
Yep.
It was UT and SFA was the second best women's program in the state of Texas. There, that was before Tech, before Baylor, SMU, before A&M was anything in women's basketball. But again, showing my age, but remember, the Lady Jacks were pretty good last year.
Yeah, Kellogg has had a.
Yeah.
I hate how much he's been overshadowed by the things that the men's team have done because they haven't broken through in Katy, and that's been their Achilles there. But
the Danny Casper men's had the same issue down there.
Right. Well, every sport
except for
every
one year.
Sport, every sport has had that problem in the
soccer,
conference tournament.
Yeah.
Except for the lately men's basketball.
Right. Right.
So it's not like Mark Kellogg is just a unique situation here. And if you go look around the Southland Conference and the other sports, for other schools, it's been the same situation too. The champions just playing don't get to go to the tournament. It's just the sad reality of life in most sports in the Southland. It's the minority of times. With basketball, though, since they've done the double bye, it's made a big difference, and you usually have one of the top two. And that's where SFA's women have kind of been a little bit of an anomaly. Because I think, let's see here, I don't think the SFA's men this last year were the first team since the double bye system on the men's bracket to ever go to the tournament. It's always been a top two team.
Yes, yes.
Until this year. And that, of course, SFA was shoved into that third spot by tiebreaker. But, man, it's...
But I thought they were still... Yeah, you're right. Their record... And it's because they dropped that ding-dong game to Lamar that they never should have lost.
And SFA's lost. Women should have won and gone to the tournament.
Yeah.
The loss to Nichols, there's not a nice way. I mean, Nichols, to their credit, also beat the top team the day before.
Yeah, they did.
But SFA blew the big lead against Nichols, and clearly that was their best shot to get in the tournament in a while. They may not be... They've got some really nice young players, but they had a team last year, and you never know after, you know. A little off topic.
You talk at SFA athletics, it doesn't take long to start wondering about men's basketball exactly. And even the Lady Jacks. Because you want to talk about, I don't know that we'll go game by game through the Lumberjack basketball season, but the...
Well, that episode will come, right?
The bar and the expectations are very high this year.
Yeah, to say the least. Well, you know... I hope everyone, you know, stays with us throughout the season, because I think our Purple Lights podcast is, we're going to be able to do a lot of things this year that maybe we didn't get to do last year. Some live stuff, bring in some more voices, get some pretty cool guests on here this year. So I hope everyone sticks with us. And this is kind of our back at it after it's been probably about eight, nine months.
Yeah, since, I mean, you've had quite a few changes. Let's see. You're a dad now. You've moved locations. You've graduated.
It's been a year of change for sure. But you know, we're back on it and looking forward to what the rest of the season brings. And we hope that there will be good news to talk about football. And I hope, you know, certainly that the Richard's version of the season plays out a little more strongly than mine. Of course, the truth is usually somewhere in between, so maybe we'll look at 7-5 and we won't look at that as necessarily a bad season either. But you know, you could go 5-6 and beat Sam, and I think you're kind of happy with the way things look.
That's what I told somebody this morning. Yeah. I said, you know, they asked me, hey, are you Lumberjacks going to win a game? And I said, well, you know, if they win one, I hope it's against your Bearcats.
Yeah, there you go. Definitely a chance, and they had that chance last year. Maybe if Foster didn't get hurt, you know, things have played out differently. And in the grand scheme of things, I don't know that it would have made that much of a difference. But you could still walk away happy saying that you won that game. So
we're looking at Mississippi State here here in a couple weeks, and it's not even a couple weeks anymore, is it?
It's time.
It's time. We're finishing up the fall practice, and man, it'll be time to lace them up and get going.
Well, thank you for listening to this week and all weeks, really, as we go through the season. It's going to become hopefully our regular podcast back, and we'll have all the listeners we had last year as we continue to grow this thing. And if you like to get on the show, if you have anything you'd like to add, send us an email, get on our forum at sfasawmill.com and join the conversation, and we're looking forward to it.
So just as a quick little aside here, most people will pick this up on the SFA Sawmill webpage. If you had subscribed before, you may need to go and resubscribe, because I think it's kind of like when we reproduce this again up on the feed with iTunes and things like that, it's kind of like assigning a different phone number, and you may have to go subscribe to that particular one. So if you are hearing this and you're like, hey, it didn't download to my phone and I used to subscribe, just go ahead and subscribe again, and you won't miss an episode. And one quick thing before we kick off, I just want to give one quick shout out to my friend Marty Woods up in Montana. You know, he's been bugging me about when you're going to start up the podcast again, and I'm glad we're doing it. Back when SFA was good and we were in the playoffs, got to know Marty up there. He's a FCS absolute genius. He knows everything about FCS football, and I get a lot of my information from him. And just want to let you know, I know you're going through some stuff right now, and we're thinking about you. And you know, go Grizz.
So shout out to Marty.
So appreciate it, and join us again. Again, resubscribe, and all of you should be getting the premium content on the SFA Sawmill. If you're not, that's a good investment as well, don't you? I mean,
oh yeah, no question. And hopefully, we'll have a lot more of that too over the next few weeks.
So, all right. Until then, I guess we will see you next time.
I'm Isaac.
This is Richard.
Axum Jacks.
Axum Jacks. Oh.